David, I'm going to start the conversation. I'm going to start the podcast now.
It's here. It's finally here. The summer episode of the Religious Studies Project. Welcome to Edinburgh, everyone on the airwaves. I'm Christopher Cotter.
I'm David Robertson.
I'm Louise Connolly.
Are they airwaves? The digital waves, is it? It's not waves, it's digital.
Yeah, but the sound waves still come from headphones or speakers.
Well, that's
air waves. So I'm right.
Good. We've settled that.
It is a Friday night after all.
And it's the end of term. So this is, in some ways, our end of year works due.
Exactly.
If you think about it that way.
All the schools have just finished today, so it's quite the schools in Scotland, that is. It's quite fitting. Coming up later for you, we've got some hilarious outtakes from the previous podcast, so you'll have to bear with us for that. And David's been out working on a sort of special outro that he's quite excited to get out.
I am excited about it. So we, given that we've got that to do as well, we'll try not to belabor this first half of this very special episode of the Religious Studies Project.
Indeed. And before we get any further, I should say that we are presented in association with the British Association for the Study of Religions, who are awesome, although who knows if they'll want to be associated with this particular one. We'll find out when we finish speaking.
So, we've put out, what is it?
This is our 68th. Official 68th numbered podcast.
Yeah, well, there's been a number of unnumbered ones as well. So we're into the 70s now. And this is the first full year we've done as well since our last hiatus. Mm-hmm. So, what have we learned this year? What did we like? What worked? What didn't work? What do you think? Chris, I'm going to ask you first.
Well, obviously, I thought everything worked, David. It's been a fantastic year. It's been a year of us having the pleasure of being able to sort of hand the reins of interviewing on to quite a large team of people now, including Louise here. Wonderful job.
Hopefully not my last one.
Exactly.
Hopefully not, yeah.
But what's been most exciting about that is that some of these folk, Knut and Per and Jack Saunis, I don't want to be missing anyone out, I've never met before. I have met the delightful Chris Silver.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I haven't met Chris Silver.
I met him once, very briefly. He asked a question, a paper I delivered in Milwaukee, and I bumped into him when he was having a coffee afterwards, and he gave me his business card or something, I think, or said he was interested in talking further, and that was it. So it's been delightful to sort of see things grow and be able to hand things on in that sense, and I think that's helped us to become a lot more international than we could have done just through, well, really the mm-hmm. two of us, you and I, David, going to conferences and things. So.
And of course, they have specialities that we don't as well, which has enabled us to broaden the palette of what we talk about significantly, I think.
So I've gone first.
I think what I thought was really, really exciting this year is our continual increase in the number of readers and followers on our website, also on Facebook and Twitter as well. And I think it would be really nice next year if we saw a bit more discussion on those forums as well. And we can pick up on certain themes that come out in the podcast and the reviews, etc. But I think what's been really, really exciting is just see that continual growth and seeing that our audience is much wider than what we first anticipated. So hopefully that continues next year as well. I think that's been great.
Definitely. And thanks, Louise, for all your constant updates on the Twitter and things. David and I jump in from time to time, mostly on Facebook, with sort of provocative links and things that we find. But the Twitter presence is very much kept going.
I think I've tweeted 3 times. I think maybe 4 times. Actually, what's the past participle of to tweet?
Twat. Oh dear. No, we'll be.
I think that what I would like to, as well as continually sort of increasing that, I would really like to have more people write into the Ops Digest. So I've got, because I manage the Ops Digest every week, that actually there's much more breadth to what the conferences call for: papers, books, journals, etc., jobs. And that would be really good if people could email us with more of that for next year. But for those that have done that this year, thank you very much, because I think that's been great.
Mm. Exactly. And it would be great to see institutions and publishers and stuff make more use of that, because that would make both of our lives a lot easier and make the Ops Digest even more valuable.
Yeah. I should say that you'll have to look out for listeners, but there's going to be one Ops Digest in August, I believe, that I am doing. So I'm going to try and
spot the difference
and see what devilry Chris can sneak into the Ops Digest.
I take no responsibility for that week in August then.
It's okay, David. Over to you.
I'll be brief. Everything you've said has been absolutely correct. I think the most gratifying aspect of it for me has been hearing about how people are using the podcasts academically, in terms of teaching. And I know Russell McCutcheon
was probably the first person that...
He was the first to tell us, and he uses Jim Cox's interview to teach about his introduction to phenomenology, I think. But...
we love Jim.
We do. But there's been several others. I was at a conference recently where somebody told me that they give their students the podcast every week and they have to write a short blog post as a response to it.
That's
which I
great.
Thought was a really nice idea. Numerous other people have given, have added it to the reading lists, for instance, as supplemental material. I just think that's really good. That was one of the things. The two big aims we had were, when we first talked about it, was one was to engage the public, and the other one was to give undergraduates an easier way into material that we thought was really intrinsically interesting, but wasn't being presented in a way that was very accessible, and that you either had a sort of dictionary entry or you had a chapter from a larger book in which a lot of it was decontextualized and unnecessarily obscured. So I'm glad that we're able to do that. That's
definitely.
Yeah.
And I think I've heard some academics say as well that it's quite nice it's a podcast and not a video, so they can actually listen to it on the way to work or it's much more accessible than downloading a massive file or anything like that. So I think that makes a lot of difference as well.
Yeah.
I mean, not to criticise our efforts, I think we've definitely succeeded on that front. And one thing I would like to, for the future for us to develop, is the sort of more public engagement, because I mean, this is just a sort of straw poll from my non-academic or non-religious studies friends, let's say. Quite a few of them have said, because I'll mention, oh, I'm doing a thing for the podcast, and they'll say, oh yeah, I tried listening to that one. And I think, what we think is accessible might not necessarily translate as much as we like. So that's something that I think we're going to keep striving for, is whilst we're definitely getting involved there with the academic community and with young scholars and undergraduates and things, it'd be great for future. And if anyone wants to take on that role, get in touch.
And then not only the academic community, but also practitioners. I think there's been a few occasions where stuff that we've done on, say, paganism
and Discordianism
and stuff, they've been picked up by people who wouldn't necessarily come into contact with academic religious studies material, and maybe they've got a bit of a taste for what we do and may not see us quite so much as, critics who are out to damn them,
which is always what we the image we want to portray, is that we are not out to you.
We're warm and fluffy.
Quite warm, quite fluffy. I don't know how much longer we want to go on, but just to give people sort of an appreciation of the scale of what's happened in the last year. Our sort of academic year started back in September 2012 with our series on material and embodied religion with and it actually ended. Mm-hmm. Is that what you were going to say?
I was going to say it's very timely because then the Sockrell conference ended up being based around that. So yeah.
But our year started with David Morgan on material religion, and our last podcast was our roundtable on material religion.
So
we've, fortuitous.
Yeah, we've put out a lot of material this year, in more ways than one.
Oh, we are hilarious. We had a few series this year. There was. We had a couple on new religious movements. There was a series on the sort of sacred, both in sort of Rudolf Otto's sui generis sense and in Gordon Lynch's more sort of non-ontological sacred idea. And then we had quite a few sort of standalone new formats.
Before we get to that, can I interrupt? And you can, I'll edit it there, and you can go from there if you like. We'd really like to hear from the listeners as to whether they thought the sort of series format works for them, and whether they prefer that to the just sort of one and done structure that we had in the first year.
Or if having the variety actually sort of helps. Rather than getting stuck in a series on things.
Exactly. I mean, is it a case of, well, you've got 3 weeks coming up of something you're not interested in, so you stop listening regularly, or do you like to go on and be surprised week on week and not really know what's coming, but be stimulated because of that? We'd like to hear about that. Sorry, Chris, go back to what
you're saying. No, quite all right. And don't worry about editing it. You never do anyway. Oh! That is very much in jest, David.
That's an in-joke.
David does a fantastic job, as you all know. But we also know that Eileen Barker comes into the room sometimes. We tried out book reviews for the first time this year, which I certainly thoroughly enjoyed being involved with. That's hopefully something that we'll do again in the future. Again, really keen to hear if that was a worthwhile exercise for the listeners.
I think also picking up from that, Chris, if there was anything else that people thought there was a gap or something that they would like, it's worth writing into us or contacting us to say what that is, because we would like to hear about different ideas. We don't want to be stuck in a rut, so if there are other things, then we could definitely explore things.
But you were going to talk about the census episode, weren't you?
I was, because then after the book reviews, our next sort of out of the ordinary episode was our incredibly fast, orchestrated by David, our incredibly fast response to the British census results. It was 2 days after the results came out that we assembled six people.
Well, actually, I organised it the day after, and then we recorded it the following day.
Yeah.
Via Skype. It's the first episode we've done via Skype.
Exactly.
I think Chris Silver has since used Skype, but yeah.
And so we got the sort of semi-official BASR response out there the 2 days afterwards. And I was just down in London at the Sockrell event discussing the census last week. But that was 6 months, and that's because that was a more traditional academic format that was bring together proper scholarly thought out papers and bring people together in one location to produce some sort of unified textual response which can then be disseminated. But so I think we complemented that very well with sort of providing a more instantaneous critique and response to balance the sort of media hysteria.
Well, to refer to another panel that we recorded this year, we provided a response in the speed that traditional journalism did, but using the analytical tools that we have as religious studies scholars, which is something that really never happens. Usually you'll get sort of journalistic responses which are skewed in one way or another, or perhaps debates between Church of England leaders and
Richard Dawkins.
Yeah, you never get the religious studies analysis, that, you know, that second level analysis happening so quickly. We were able to do it. We've created a reputation and a pool of contacts that made it possible to do that. And I don't think that that's really ever happened before, mm-hmm. and that was a great pleasure.
And, you know, long may that continue in future. You know, again, you know, we hope that that's not a one-off, that if there's another big news story that is getting a lot of coverage in the media, but with that sort of media idea of neutrality being get the two most extreme shouty voices mm-hmm. to shout at each other, mm-hmm. And then call it neutrality and analysis.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can step in and do something again.
And interesting that in both the Sockrell event that you were talking about and the paper on it at the OU conference that I was at a few weeks ago were people who took part in our roundtable. Yeah. We were talking about it, George Cassidis at the OU
and
Beth Singler in London. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we've just been talking about the news. Of course, our other thing we did was our first Religious Studies Project conference panel in association with the Journal of Religion, Media and Digital Culture. That was at the Sockrell conference this year. And again, we hope that that'll be happening more frequently.
Yeah, and thanks to Tim Hutchings for suggesting that.
And the only other, I think, somewhat unorthodox format that we tried was our fantastic game show at Christmas. If you haven't listened to it yet, please go back and have a listen. And we have plans afoot for next year.
I'm just going to ask, is that likely to be something that might reoccur?
Well, it will reoccur. How
and, necessarily.
How and when? I'm waiting confirmation that it's going to happen at a leading religious studies conference.
In
September. But I can't quite confirm it yet. But the people I've spoken to in terms of being guests, if that comes off, it's going to be bigger and better than last year's. Our main concern at the moment is trying to decide which game show it's going to be, whether we repeat only 60 seconds or whether we go for another one.
Yeah, and I mean, apart from that, next year, you know, we've got about 10 interviews in the bag already for you.
Mm-hmm.
Hannah Lettinen is recording interviews maybe as we speak us at the International Society for the Sociology of Religion in Turku.
We've got three or four booked already for the EASR conference in September.
Yeah, and those should be coming to you from a brand spanking new look website.
Yes.
And of course, we aren't going to shut up over the summer. We're going to keep the Opportunities Digest coming, and we possibly have a bonus podcast from the NSRN, Matthew Ngelke's lecture on the anthropology of humanism, mm-hmm. Which we might get out to you, and we'll keep posting, you know, things from the archive and stuff, because as we say, this is the 68th podcast. There's a lot of stuff that happened September 2011 that, you know, I can't even remember.
Any last thoughts before we sign off for the summer?
Yeah, I think the only thing I think from all of us, I think we just want to reiterate that without the listeners, without the interviews, without the interviewees, without the reviewers, without everybody who's involved in it, that this wouldn't work. So just want to thank everybody for such a successful year.
Well done, you.
Well done. And we will raise our glasses. And we will say in unison, and it will work perfectly this time.
Thanks for listening.
Listening. and we're also hoping to cap that series off with a report from Erica Solomon. Yes, I believe it was the American Psychological Association conference, but I'm not entirely sure on that. We should have that up before.
Yes, we should have.
I'm sorry for bringing that up. Would you like to?
We can. No. Let's keep this in. We need to let people know that we are not the consummate professionals that they think.
Yes,
they are.
Yeah, drawing back the
curtain. Or in fact, even being this incompetent, we're still as awesome. It takes even more effort to be this awesome when you're this incompetent.
Yeah.
This is outtake material.
It's all about the money, money, money. It's all about the money, money, money.
I hate Jesse James.
You can't
so
see David's duds there. Okay, so. Oh, what's the time? Oh, we're pretty late for the seminar.
Well, I said I might not be there till 5, so we'll be early. We can rock in like the superstars we are.
Right.
I went into a record shop once and tried to buy this record, and he said it was £3.99. I said, hey, dude, it's not about the cha-ching, cha-ching. He told me to f*** off.
Excellent.
Okay. So,
Megan Gilland has just arrived, so if you'd just like to say hello so everyone can recognise your voice, Meg.
Hi, everyone. I'm being asked to attack Ethan, and I'm not entirely sure why.
You can't think of anything you could always just physically attack. Wait, so you're probably going to edit that part out. Hold on.
I think this is in reference to a face that I made as when you said that theology departments are biased. And I don't know how that's necessarily relevant to our discussion for me to bring that up at this point.
Boom.
It's recording that.
Why is it recording?
Because it was good.
I noticed it was still on and I was like, it should be on.
You study, you mentioned it a few times.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about because I've worked with him.
You work with him?
Yeah.
It's good to me, you work with him.
Yeah, I worked with him at he called me an idiot and said my work was
That's working.
How old is he now?
He's in his 80s, but I worked with him.
Why did he
was fairly enthusiastic about
it. Oh, he's fairly enthusiastic about atheist studies.
Wow.
He asked me what I was doing, and at the time I was doing a PhD dissertation on the legality of atheism under the First Amendment in the United States Constitution. And he said, that's really great. I mean, it's pretty good. And then he, finished that off with, we'll talk more about it. And then we spent the rest of the time together. So,
he has a special humor and
he is very dirtily funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, the humor comes through, but when you sit down with him privately, he's a very dirty man.
We're going to stop recording now, everybody.
That was an interview I was very interested in hearing. It was, I pushed Chris somewhat into that one.
And not that I didn't want to do it, but come on.
He fought.
You're the networking guy, so it is your responsibility.
Tooth and nail not to do that one, but eventually he relented, and I think he's come round to reluctantly admitting that it was fine.
This is David somewhat creating a fictional representation.
Sorry.
One of the most fun things I've done and bizarre things that's happened to me in recent years was we have some very interesting colleagues in philosophy, very nice people. And so they said, well, would someone from religious studies like to do it was the rationality workshop or whatever. Anyway, do a paper for one of these lunchtime seminars that they had. And so for various reasons, we decided that the good thing to do would be to have Graham talk about a rock that he was given.
Okay.
It was one of the First Nation peoples in Canada.
Is this one of the ones that move?
And it's,
or certain of them.
Well, he wasn't really saying anything, but he was saying, and he was trying to explain ideas of new animism and things like that.
Personhood.
But personhood, exactly. And saying, and I've got this, I'm just going to unwrap it. And it's in with, because they asked me to take some grass from the area so it wouldn't be lonely when it travelled. They'd given him this, so they were anticipating it would go away. But they'd also said, could he keep it with this bit of grass so it didn't get lonely? And things like that. And then so he was talking about, addressing rocks and addressing things in nature. And I mean, it was just lovely. I just wish we'd videoed it, because the philosophers were just losing it. They couldn't get it. And we realised that one of the things about our philosophy colleagues is that they think that there's one version of truth and reality. Mm. And so they can't understand how we can deal with these people who are clearly mad.
Yeah.
And we can't understand how they can think that there is one graspable, observable version of truth and reality. Yeah. It's just a complete wee.
One of my colleagues said recently, they were talking about, you know, one of the nice things about religious studies is that anybody can come in and say any mad thing, and everybody will go, thank you so much for that, that was really fascinating, but then I've got this little question about methodology. If you did the same in a philosophy department, there would be, it's full of holes, it makes absolutely no sense, you haven't taken this into account, doesn't he say this, the exact opposite? Yeah. And there would be, you know, this aggressive thing in the details, but, you know, we religious scholars, at least a lot of us, like that kind of, you know,
I think
crazy detail.
It's that thing that Ninian Smart said, although he's becoming unfashionable in many circles, but he said, you know, it's like, it's making the strange familiar and the familiar strange.
Yeah, yeah.
And that you haven't really begun to, if you come from a Christian background, you haven't really got the hang of it until you notice how strange it is.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that, you know, then you've made the, you know, he's saying, then you've made the transition to being a scholar.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Uh-huh.
You're entitled to your opinion, even though you're wrong. But for those of you
edit.
No.
well,
because David has forgotten who he's talking about without further
no,
ado.
No, I had never forgotten. You misrepresented me.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's my phonological attitude.
It is, yeah.
I tend to do that.
You bracketed out the truth.
Yes.
Boom.
I would prefer there being a wall of separation. But that is not, that is my personal politics and nothing to do with religious studies. If religion and politics, the walls begin to break down or crumble or whatever, then it's just something I observe.
Right.
I'm not, indeed, me arguing that the wall should be there with my scholarly hat on would be as much a violation as me arguing that it should be torn down or whatever.
Okay, that was Liam defending the Berlin Wall then.
No.
So, I'm going to let you finish lighting your pipe, and I'm going to... Hey, is the interview ruined, Tommy?
No.
We're about time there. Would you like to close up?
No.
I can't do it. Yeah,
but other than that... Louise...
Yeah, I would just like to say thank you for listening.
No, you gotta say it right.
Say it properly. Thanks for listening.
Say it right.
Go thanks on. For listening.
With enthusiasm.
Say it again.
So I'd just like to say this week, thank you for listening.
Say it right.
That kind of that presentation, but with the right words. Great.
Okay.
So go.
So thank you.
So yeah, there's only one thing left to say, and I'll pass you over to Louise.
And that's thanks for listening.
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 Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone.
Pub.
Yeah.